Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The FBI has just sent a letter to Congress informing them that they have discovered new emails pertaining to the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's investigation.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of Polydex. Coming to you live, and by live I mean recorded live. I was alive when it was recorded. This is pre-recorded. It's a podcast. That's how they work. I'm at the Hotel Marriott in beautiful Anaheim. Just one crazy Kiwi named Tim Batt bird-dogging his way around the United States, specifically the West Coast. And joining me, as always, my faithful companion from Florida, Jeb. Kindly introduce yourself.
You know, it has been my privilege to be your Sherpa on this journey. And, you know, I can only hope that in the future we can find another quest for the both of us. One that is not as thoroughly beshitted and immiserating and, you know, enervating as this one.
Hey, here's hoping. Dreams are free, aren't they? I'm going to immediately mitigate your foul mood, Jeb. I want to do like a good news report to really kick this thing off. And I'd also like to apologize for the length of time between drinks, metaphorically speaking. Turns out it's quite hard to keep your projects going when you are dotting yourself around the United States, doing a lot of travel. It ain't easy,
especially
but,
if you're not from
thank
here.
You for your understanding.
Especially if you're not from here, because, you know, we are, I think we are uniquely violent people, and I feel like we might have incidentally threatened you or made you feel like you need to exit the roadway. And
Do you know where I've felt the least safe so far, considering I've spent most of my time in LA, was Portland, Oregon.
No kidding.
Just because, like, I was downtown, and I was, to be honest, I was pretty high because it's Oregon. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
When in Rome, smoke the legal weed. But I'm not sure if I was just getting a little bit sketchy and paranoid because of that. But they really live by that credo of keep Portland weird, because there are a lot of people doing a lot of crazy shit and arguing with each other, and a lot of police around. Things really kicking off.
Well, you like to think that that's the effect of having so much good local IPA. You know, they've just they had a nice afternoon and they've just sort of migrated slowly into maybe an unpleasant evening, and you got caught up in it.
They've really gone to town on it. No. Jeb, two little rays of sunshine to permeate, which I'm sure is going to turn into a very sour and dark episode before too long. I wanted to kick off by congratulating Donald Trump Jr. for being a real human being. A real human being. What a kind compliment for Donald Trump Jr.
And a real
for helping
hero.
A woman. Was he? Yeah, okay. Yeah, good. Okay, I'll build on that. I was expecting you to undercut me with cynicism, but yes. Yes, and. In Mesa, Arizona, helping a woman in 100-degree heat push her car when it stalled and managed to get some bottles of water to make sure she'd be okay while the repair guy came. That's a cool thing to do.
No, God bless him. I mean, like, it doesn't matter who you are. It is scary to drive in the desert. The first time I ever drove cross-country, I was driving through Arizona. And, you know, it was a relatively new car. Nothing was amiss with it. And then I just watched the temperature gauge go from, you know, that comfortable right in the middle that it always has. And then it just slammed to the right. And suddenly I turned the heater on and I opened all the windows and I was trying to blow air off the engine. And, you know, I was going slower.
Shit.
And I just kept thinking, like, please not here. Because it is terrifying to be in the middle. Like, in this case, it was Death Valley. And, you know, which has the name that sort of suggests a certain ominousness.
It's right there on the tin.
Yeah.
All the clues for your impending death are right there on the street sign.
Yeah, they really, I mean, they, you know, the whole third act twist of the valley you're in is really just sort of given away, you know, at the start. And I like, listen, you know, far be it for me to complain about the dramaturgy of the place, but, like, I was scared shitless. So, you know, God bless him.
Do you think that Donald Trump... Is Donald Trump Senior Donald Trump Senior? He's never referred to it. Donald J. Trump. Do you think he would get out and help someone push their car?
Absolutely not. I think he would have a very hefty man. I think he would have a very hefty Jerseyan man with a, you know, probably a history of having a nose broken. Just get out and do it.
Yeah, I don't even think he would stop, though. That's the thing. Like, this is this interesting separation between Donald J. Trump and his kids that's become apparent as they've been more and more in the media. I had no sense of who his kids were previously at all. But Ivanka has kind of come out as this really cool, self-made businesswoman who has contributed kind of the only thing that liberals could gravitate towards whatsoever in the policy realm that Trump's put out with the I was gonna say maternal leave, because it only extends to the mother of the child, if I remember correctly, which got a bit of stick, but hey, considering it's a Trump policy, off to a good start, you know, all things considered. No, and credit where it's due.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, just welcome a bipartisan consensus on this. I mean, obviously, like, the Trump juggernaut is going to spin out at some point, and it's not going to have a staying power as a policy-making engine. But the fact that there has been this sort of interregnum in the madness with, you know, an interregnum of its own madness, where we have a bipartisan consensus on, you know, paid maternity leave. That's phenomenal. Yeah. And we are so far behind everyone. Like, you always watch it, man. You look at those charts and it's like, well, you know, America, you get nothing. And then it's like Romania, you know, Romania where they have just a disturbing, actually, I think America and Romania have the same, infant mortality, which is,
oh my
also
God,
like, just galling. But, you know, Romania is ahead of us in sending moms home.
Jesus, that's depressing. Is it something to do with the fact, because I always, when these statistics come out and these little tidbits about, you know, paid parental leave or holiday pay, that kind of thing for Americans, is it the fact that North America is really like a continent because each state is like a little country unto itself, and that they're supposed to be regulating workers' rights? And just that no one passed it on to the state legislature, that was their duty, and they should have got onto that a long time ago, or what? Like, is it one of those things that kind of fell between the cracks because of the way that the United States works as a country, do you think?
Absolutely, and you're on the right track, because you know, the old founders, you know, the founding fathers' line was that the states will be the laboratory of democracy. So what you can do is, when you have an initiative you want to push, or an idea that you might want to push, you let a state try it out and see if they fail.
Right.
So that's why you have, you know, you've had skewed healthcare regulations, you've had skewed, you know, and discontinuous marriage regulations. So you have that as a factor, and then there's just the general attitude of, like, if we pay for people to have kids, then, well, black people will just have kids and not do anything. You know, you can always, like, can invariably look at a social program and ask, why does America not have it? And the answer is always black people. It's a bunch of people who, you know, reliable, white, working and middle-class voters who went, no, you know, in spite of the fact that, like, you know, the plurality of people on welfare for the duration of the existence of welfare has been white people. You can still demonize welfare as going, like, well, black people are using it. So that's a huge factor. And then, what was the other one I was going to go for?
This is probably a good time to fill in the blanks with Jeb's current mental condition as well. The man has not been sleeping.
Yeah, I've been up for I've been up for 22 hours.
Oh, okay. That's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. And the other good piece of news as well, Jeb, sorry to cut you off.
Sure,
was it important?
No, please.
The Mike Pence plane crash, where apparently the vice presidential nominee, first thing he did, went back, checked everyone was okay, and luckily they were. But I tell you what, that Pence plane is having a little bit of an interesting time with its pilots, because I think that the guy who crashed in what seems to be pretty fine conditions when he was landing, like a really rough landing, is the guy who replaced another dude who was like had an arrest warrant, but they couldn't find him for ages.
No shit, I missed this. Go on, yeah.
Oh, dude, this is... So, Rachel Maddow's been covering this. Well, by covering, it's actually only been, I think, on two shows. And I'm massively behind because I usually keep somewhat on top of the cycle with all my podcasts and my readings and whatnot. But I've...
But you're on a global tour. You have an eminently reasonable excuse.
Thank you.
You've left your homeland. You've crossed the Pacific. You've come to California and Oregon. You've gone from Portland to San Francisco to L.A., and then I think you've gone back to L.A. And,
yeah,
you know,
that's
right. And it's a work trip, too. You know, you're not just, like, fucking around. You're not going, well, I'm going to go to Portland and see... I'm going to see if they can put, you know, 160 pounds of hops into one bottle of IPA and then drink it and have a thoroughly unpleasant time. You've actually gone and done shows. So, you know...
I'm going to take your excuse and run as far as I can with it. So thank you for that extension cord, Jeb. Yeah, but Mike Pence, a human being, you know, a real life human being.
Well, you know, it's funny. Like I spoke to a couple people who have been on the Pence plane, who've actually been covering him as part of you know, their campaign coverage for outlets, and apparently, like with both the pilots, they just have had this notorious habit of coming in hard. So they had these really, really rough landings, and then it wasn't an aberrant thing. Like LaGuardia has really, really short runways, and it's just, you know, it's a relic of being constructed at a different time and having different you know, jet demands. So it's just this confluence of like these guys coming hard, and then they came in hard on a really short runway, and then you know, they hit the mud that impedes the skidding. And then, of course, you watch the right-wing memes that are like, well, you know, Democrat-built runway, it's not good at doing this. Like, no, it actually saved you. Like, the thing that you're complaining about, like, that looks like dirty, that is literally why Mike Pence is still alive and so is everyone on the plane. So just...
Don't play into that false narrative, Jeb. Let's not politicize the goddamn runway that people are using. Like, can't we have some base level of infrastructure that we can all agree is, you know, functional and necessary and doesn't have to be colored either blue or red?
You know, it used to be in this country that politics stopped at the runway. You know, that's what we said. And, I mean, really, the Bush administration, they turned that corner and, you know, or they opened that door, and who are we to forbid everyone else to walk through it?
I'll tell you what I think. Let's take a really brief break here, and this can be like the nice third of the podcast. And when we come back, we're going to start slinging some of that famous short runway LaGuardia mud at each other. You keen?
Right on. Let's do it.
Everybody, you got the WikiLeaks released a March 12th Podesta email showing you messaging the Clinton campaign with the exact wording of a question asked at the March 13th CNN TV One town hall debate.
Kelly,
where did you get it?
I, you know, as a Christian woman, I understand persecution, but I will not sit here and be persecuted because your information is totally false.
Welcome back to Politics, the podcast that pits a witless, flightless Kiwi against a bald eagle of a man. Jeb, you are the bald eagle in this metaphor, and I am the hapless Kiwi, Tim Batt, coming to you from Anaheim in this episode. We've done the nice bit, and I know that this happened a long time ago in the general scheme of the campaign. I just wanted to mention the Donna Brazile thing, and don't worry, we will be talking about the FBI stuff real soon.
Be sure to bug out.
But the Don... Hey?
No, I just said, be sure to bug out.
Is that... What is that? Is that Yiddish, or is that Arabic, or...
Sorry, this is completely pointless. My father and my aunt and uncle grew up in Dahran, Saudi Arabia, and they were part of Aramco, the Arabian American oil company. So my grandfather was a pilot, and he flew all the sheikhs and the members of the House of Saud around to, like, they would want to go play golf, so he would fly them to Turnberry, Scotland, or they would want to shop, so he'd fly them to Paris, so they could go to the Rue de Rivoli. So my dad grew up with like this sort of pidgin English between Arabic and English, and so, like, you know, sort of like this long phrase that would end in inshallah became bishur bagad.
Wow.
Bishur.
What a fascinating life he must have led.
Yeah, no, like he built a dune buggy by hand, and then he would drive his dune buggy through the Rubicalli, which is just sand. It's just nothing. And,
man, that is so cool.
Which is, like, just the ballsiest thing I can imagine. Because, you know, if something goes wrong with that thing, you're going to die out there.
Oh, we were talking about the Death Valley. It's like that times 1,000.
Yeah, yeah. Like, and that was his fun. Like, that's what he and his buddies did in between playing baseball. So,
right. Man, that's cool. The Donna Brazile thing is Donna Brazile is the she still is, I think, the interim DNC chair after Debbie Wasserman Schultz left. And she's a former CNN employee. Is that right? Was she an anchor on there or something?
Well, she was the campaign manager for Gore in 2000.
Ah, right. And then she did CNN after that, I take it. And then, anyway, there was a town hall debate with Bernie and Hillary in March. And it's come out through the Podesta email leaks that Donna Brazile managed to have the exact wording of one of the questions that was at the town hall. And she said in the email, from time to time, I get questions in advance. And then, lo and behold, if you look at the tape, the question that was in that leaked Podesta email from her was said verbatim by the guy from TV1 who was moderating on the debate stage. And Hillary Clinton obviously had an answer pre-rolled for that one. So it's been weird because it seems like I've been a little bit out of the loop, as I mentioned, and as far as I can tell, it hasn't quite been resolved. Has there been anything juicy on this or anything that's kind of concluded it for you, Jeb, that you've seen pop up in the last few days? Because I've seen her flounder a lot with people like Megyn Kelly trying to explain it.
Well, I mean, they keep trying to bring it up to give it traction, but this is one of those stories that just got blown out of the water by the story that Donald Trump likes to, finger bang women without their consent. This was like a first debate story, and it really, I mean, so much madness has happened in, you know, the aftermath. And I think also for a lot of pragmatic, you know, voters or news watchers, you know, they can just intuit that this happens, right? You know.
Yeah. Right. Right. You know, so it's.
I mean, like, Trump has Corey Lewandowski as a surrogate in CNN, and Lewandowski is flying on his plane, and still has, you know, an actual position within the organization on whatever their filing is. I can't remember what it is, right? But he's still, you know, he's allegedly independent. So, I have no doubt that they got some idea of some of the questions that were going to be asked of Donald Trump and mentioned it to him. And, you know, the advantage of not mentioning that they had some idea in advance is they can say, well, only the Democrats cheated. But, you know, everybody gets this stuff. You know, you bump into people. So, and more to the point, like, all of this stuff is really generic. Like, you know, if Clinton hadn't gotten the exact detail of that question, she probably already had a canned answer for it.
So, she probably did, yeah. It was about the death penalty, which she's got kind of a pretty nuanced position on. Someone had obviously flagged that it was going to be a bit problematic. Yeah, well, you remember that she's in her late 60s every now and then, right? And this is like one of those times. But so from your point of view, Jeb, could we kind of sum it up by saying, like, even if it is the absolute worst case scenario, which it does seem to be, it's kind of like this is obviously not ideal, but it's one of those things that happens. Is it illegal?
I don't think there's any law against it, because it's the debates are managed and the questions are created by a private entity. So
yeah,
it's not like the U.S. government made the debate. So you're not defrauding the government. And I really don't think there's a whole lot of traction to this. I mean, so much has happened in the interim to take it away, away from it. Where you do see it and where it is getting pushed as an issue is really, you know, the Breitbart and Dumber, or the Breitbart and racister right-wing websites, where, I mean, like, you know, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal is not banging this drum anymore, even though their editorial page is, you know, just to the left of Goebbels.
All right, then. Well, the hyper version of it would be James O'Keefe's videos that he's been putting out over the last couple of weeks in several parts.
Fuck that dude! Sorry. Comes up.
So this is, what are they called again? Project Veritas?
Project Veritas, which means truth. And, you know, fuck you. That doesn't mean, like, you could not find a more, like, significant profanation of the idea of truth than like James O'Keefe's entire career, right? So he takes down Acorn by, you know, he has these heavily edited videos and he releases in the mainstream media, and he goes on CNN and Fox and everything dressed like a pimp, right? He's, you know, got the big feather in his hair and he's got like a big fur coat and, you know, the colorful sunglasses. And at no point in the actual tapes when he was going and trying to hoodwink Acorn was he dressed like this. But he tried to give the impression that he did it, like he was clearly this big white pimp going to do white slavery and Acorn helped him out. And then it turned out that, like, there, nothing happened. There was no there. Like, he heavily edited his tapes. Heavily edited his tapes. And all that Acorn did was, like, a couple of, you know, guys who were interviewing him kind of played along with his scenario. He's like, you know, well, I want to be a white slaver. And they went, oh, okay.
But you know, what about this time, Jeb? What about these videos? Because
done. Okay. So the next thing he did was he tried to break into Mary Landrieu's office in Louisiana. So he tries to break into the office of a senator of Louisiana, and he gets busted. He gets busted, and he winds up with a plea deal. So, you know, the guy is a criminal.
Oh, so when people keep saying that he's a criminal, that's the charge that they're referring to.
He is literally a criminal. And actually, this is a completely, you know, like a side topic, but in 2012, during the RNC, he was going to go to come down to Tampa and get an award for, you know, fearlessness in right-wing journalism and telling the truth or whatever. And my editor at the time, John Cook of Gawker, called James O'Keefe's probation officer and said, can James leave the state to go to Florida? And James O'Keefe's probation officer said, absolutely fucking not, and hung up and called James O'Keefe and said, you're not getting a fucking award. Stay in fucking New Jersey or wherever the fuck you are, right? Like, so, you know, just like, if nothing else, that dude got clowned by his own history and he deserves it. Because, like, he fucking, you know, like, he got busted breaking into a senator's office. At the same time, he was doing this, you know, this was the same time period where he was accused of sexual harassment by his own fucking partner in making these, like, ginned up, you know, like, heavily edited videos. So this woman who went down to Louisiana with him and was, you know, like, supposed to be his partner in crime, like Robin to his Batman, went, you know, motherfucker tried to assault me. So she sued him. I have no idea what happened in that case because that just sort of vanished. And then, you know, like, the next thing he did was he went to NYU and tried to ambush a bunch of professors, like, you know, hey, liberal moron, whatever. He got fucking blown apart in his own ambush. Like, somebody, you know, he asked a question and there's a video of it. I can find, like, the link. But, you know, like, some professor just listens to him and goes, you know, you're a fucking asshole. You're a clown. You don't know what you're talking about. And he just steamrolls the motherfucker in the middle of his own ambush.
So was he trying to get some gotcha footage from some university professors?
Yeah, you know, like pointy-headed liberals, they're part of the left-wing establishment, they don't know what's going on. And, like, you know, dude knew exactly what he was asking about. And then it gets worse. So this year, motherfucker sabotaged his own ambush again by, like, he called, you know, it was in the New Yorker, it was a phenomenal article, it was really amusing. I think it was Jane Mayer, maybe, wrote it, but the dude, like, was trying to rat fuck somebody and called and left a voicemail and then didn't hang up and then set the phone down on a table and discussed his entire strategy for rat fucking this group on a voicemail. So he, like, the motherfucker punked himself. This is, there was a line, I can't remember who said it, I think it was John Dolan in The Exiled, called him a way-faced little shit, like W-H-E-Y, way, right? And he was, he's, the Acorn thing was completely abetted by the mainstream left media and by that sort of, like, center-left consensus. Like, he didn't kill them. He didn't kill Acorn. Lefties who panicked killed Acorn. Bad journalism. The New York Times did not print a retraction for years. I don't know if they ever have. Of their completely inaccurate reporting on what Acorn was doing on those videotapes. They didn't investigate it. They got it wrong. They fucked it up. They fucked Acorn. Last I checked, they didn't apologize. Like, this dude, like, the only head on this dude's wall was hoisted up by somebody else after somebody else killed it. So, you know, now he's just this puling little, you know.
How old is James O'Keefe? Because I thought he looked like he was sort of in his late 20s or something, but this seems to be quite an illustrious past of chicanery.
No, I think he is in his late 20s. I know that I saw him many times in Cleveland at the RNC, and so did my writing partner, Dan O'Sullivan. You know, we kept running into him.
In 2012? Well, this
in July of this year. We kept running into him, and he was, if not explicitly running buddies, frequently in the crowd with a lot of Gamergate Nazis. These guys who are shaped like Mr. Potato Head and feel like women do not deserve rights, and neither do blacks or Hispanics or Jews or really anyone except people shaped like Mr. Potato Head.
Have you watched the latest batch of videos, or did you just not want to do it to yourself?
Which videos? Oh, the Veritas?
The Project Veritas ones that are coming out at the moment.
I watched one and then I just bailed because, I mean, he has never had a video that has stood up to any independent scrutiny. They've always been, they've always been heavily edited and presented it with this disingenuous context. He just does like empty character assassination stuff. He goes and he asks questions until he gets the responses he wants and edits them together to create a narrative that would never stand if you just actually pressed record and waited.
Well, listen, man, I hasten to qualify this by, of course, saying that you're the expert, but it seems like some shit is going down with these latest ones, and maybe he's getting better at this thing. Because Bob Cremer, who was this longtime Democratic advisor with Democracy Partners, I think he's had to resign off the back of these videos, which fit. There's, I think, the fifth one's just come out today, and it's basically a lot. They've managed to have incredibly offhanded chats recorded with secret hidden video cameras and sound recorders with Bob Cremer seems to be like the main character in these videos, and Scott Fovell of the Fovell Group, which is another Democracy Partners is the name of that one, and it's another one of these. It's not a pack, is it? I think they're organizations that are contracted by the packs to undertake certain work to increase the vote. But been things discussed on camera, like a term called bird dogging, which I'd never heard before, which is basically getting in the face of, in this context, Trump supporters and instigating some sort of confrontation so that they can record it and then kind of give it to the media and hold it up as a big example of what big douchebags all the Trump supporters are.
Yeah, no, so this is one of those other things where, like, if you've really gotten into politics in America and how campaigns are prosecuted or whatever verb you want to use, like, just conducted, none of this shit is a surprise at all, right? again, like, James O'Keefe comes out, it's like, I've got this, exclusive, this Democratic operative is saying, like, I would kill 1,000 people in this town and then replace them with robots or something. It does not take a lot of effort to get people on campaigns to say this kind of shit. I mean, it's basically like being in grad school for history or politics or something. You know, eventually you study the same things over and over. You're going over the same material and you just start, the term for people who want to, change the outcomes of like wrestling matches, like WrestleMania, is fantasy booking, right? You pick your you book your favorite leader and your favorite opponent, and then you book your favorite shenanigans off screen. And so it's not hard to get these guys to go, listen, here's how I would suppress all the white voters in this county. Because it's a thought exercise, because they know what the tools are. They've used these tools to a certain extent, and it's just like, well, fuck it. I mean, this is fun. Like, it's a thought exercise. Let's screw around. They're never going to do it because that would be like.
Hold on. Let me change tack for a second. Sure. Do you think it's a big deal for the campaigns to coordinate with the PACs, because that's illegal? Do you think it's actually a big deal?
Oh no, it's a huge deal, and it's disgusting, and literally everybody does it. Hillary Clinton's PAC, she's got David Brock, who owns Media Matters and runs Media Matters, is handling one of her PACs, and they have, like, my friend Libby Watson at the Sunshine, I think it's Sunshine Foundation, did a really, really excellent article. Just Google Libby Watson.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And Clinton and Brock and Pack or something like that, of how like they have skirted up so far to the letter of the law and completely devoured the intent of like, well, I'm not coordinating with you on this thing. I am having lunch with you every day.
Yeah.
And right. And we've come up with a plan for solvency for my business, but I'm not coordinating with you. Like the Clinton campaign has been really the most disgusting in this regard, especially because of Clinton's campaigning against Citizens United and dark money. They profited enormously from it. And I get it. Like, you're going to be disingenuous. You're going to say this is bad and then take it because your opponent is going to. But they really did actually push the envelope on this one.
To shine up my Bernie bro badge once again in this podcast series, that was like the big startling thing about Bernie, that he was going, hey, super PACs are terrible, therefore I'm not going to use it. Whereas the Clinton philosophy has been more, hey, super PACs are terrible and we should ban them. They exist right now and they're legal and I want to do everything I can to change the law once I'm in power, but they're there. So they're a tool that I should use for the moment because I need to. And hey, she did become the candidate. So... maybe that's got something to do with it. Let's take a quick breather while Jeb recovers.
Sorry.
And I fucking loved getting all that context actually about who James O'Keefe is and his history.
Fuck that dude. Fuck him.
I'm gonna look more into his background. In exchange, Jeb, I want you to make me a promise to watch one more of those videos.
All right.
Well, they're 15 minutes long. You can do it. After the break, we're going to be talking about all this FBI stuff that's going on at the moment.
But I don't know where these emails came from. What?
Apparently, Anthony Weiner.
Well, oh God, oh. Anthony Weiner. I should not comment on Anthony Weiner. I'm not a big fan, and I wasn't before he got in trouble, so I shouldn't comment on Anthony Weiner.
Welcome back to Politics, the podcast that answers the question, what happens if you get someone who doesn't know that much about American politics, who lives in New Zealand, and pair it up with someone who's been writing about politics for years? I'm Tim, he's Jeb.
I've not slept, and I'm going to admit right now I'm on some drugs. If you get lost at some point in this podcast, I guarantee you it's my fault.
Oh, that's very sweet. I'm not going to correct that at all. I'm going to heap that on. If I lead people astray, it's all Jeb's fault.
Speaking of
leading people astray, there has been a lot of coverage in the last few hours, and it's almost, we're getting so microscopic now, down to the wire, 9 days now before election day, that we're measuring units of time in the election by 3-hour blocks, it seems, about the response to James Comey, the director of the FBI, coming out in the last 56 hours with a letter to Congress announcing that some materials have been found through the course of an investigation into Anthony Weiner for suspected sending a sexually explicit text to a 14-year-old girl from North Carolina, if I remember the reporting right.
I think she was 15, but not that it really matters.
Right. It's important to be accurate. So during the course of that FBI investigation, a device has been sequestered by them and some new emails have been found that, after the fact, it turns out probably weren't sent to or from Clinton, but are somehow pertinent to the investigation of Hillary Clinton's private email server. And Comey thought that this was relevant enough to send this public declaration that they would be, he didn't use the word reopening the case. Apparently that was Jason Chaffetz said that himself, who's the Republican leader of the Senate committee. What is he in charge of?
No, he's in, I don't know. He looks like Booger from Revenge of the Nerds. Fuck him.
House Oversight Committee, I think. I think I've got that right. So anyway,
he's in the Senate
was
now.
His language.
He wasn't the House. I can't remember what committee he was on, but he's in the Senate.
Shit,
now.
He's He's got some position that has allowed him to make some threats that if Hillary Clinton gets in now, she's going to be under constant investigation, which I'm sure we're all looking forward to. But at any rate, just
at least 4 more years of gridlock. What I love about government is its capacity to never do a fucking thing. That's why I vote for people. I want them to get in there and stare each other down and then say, how can we not help anyone around us? Because we want to be
the fucking thing.
We never want to be accountable for anything. Like how can you and I have this binary opposition where like you go right and then I go right and we just keep staring each other down and you go left and I go left, and at the end of 4 years everybody is still fucked, but we get reelected.
You know what's screwed as well is like from a slightly more globally facing point of view. America is the leader of the free world still. You're this big, huge, giant economy. You're the world's biggest democracy. You've got more diplomatic power than anyone else on Earth. And there are two problems that we're all facing, particularly in the developed West. The first one is climate change.
Absolutely.
The second one is the robots are taking all of our jobs that we've formed under the current economy, and it's totally changing the landscape of how the not at all too distant future is going to look for regular people, and what it means to have a technological divide, what it means to have a college degree, and the massive divide between those who are educated and those who aren't getting into trades and jobs because they're going to be taken away by automated machines and software and AI, and what that's going to look like. And these are like two separate, very fucking big problems, potentially. The first one, climate change, is definitely a problem. The second one could be an opportunity if the politicians could get together and maybe figure something out. But the constant political gridlock that happens in America and has been happening with this Republican-led House that just by virtue of it being Obama, it doesn't matter what the idea is, they will block it by default every single time. It's just like the clock is running out.
They keep passing these
yearly budgets. There's no vision for like a long-term idea of what the economy could look like or how to help people. It's fucking frustrating to watch, man.
No, and like I've wanted Obama to just submit a bill to Congress with a name like Pussy is Great. You know, like the Pussy is Great bill, and just watch like the Republicans go, no, nobody likes it. No, something like so fucking obvious. Like hot dogs are great, or like baseball is fun.
I don't know.
And just watch them obstruct it.
For example, Jeb, the Patriot Act, something like that kind of a name?
Yeah, but like, not evil. Just about food or something.
Well, it's only evil because of like what we know the act is now, but it's the same principle. It's so frustrating to watch, man. And this does give a little bit of hope to the kind of the cynicism and what's the word? It's not disappointment. Whatever the word is. The way that people feel about Hillary Clinton, right, is that she's this duplicitous agent of pure politics. But in the current environment, maybe you guys are getting exactly the president you need. Because could anyone else crawl through the weeds and make these backroom cigar deals and try and figure this shit out with people using whatever methods are necessary? And it might take some really rolling up of the sleeves and some weird dark House of Cards bullshit to get stuff moving forward. But I can't think of anyone more qualified to do it. I think Bernie Sanders probably would have been hamstrung by his own morality and ethics in his job. And Obama's done a pretty fantastic job, but it feels like it's just getting more and more divisive as time's going on.
Man, there's like so many points to address. Like, first of all, it's divisive. Don't like drink the Obama Kool-Aid. I don't know why it became divisive in like the last 8 years. Like, divide, divisive. Like, it's a long I. Like, don't overthink it. But like, no, I totally agree with you. I think Sanders probably would have had a lost year. He would have come in with a lot of naivete in the same way that Obama did, where he really felt like he could create compromises and consensus on Capitol Hill, and then eventually had to realize like he was just going to be obstructed no matter what. I think that would have happened to Sanders. I think he probably would have come in. He has a record of passing the current members of Congress. I think he has the record for most amendments to bills passed.
Yeah.
So he does a really good job of like you know, negotiating bills, you know, or negotiating provisions that help his constituents or help the American people in general into these existing bills and bargaining, I think he probably would have come in and thought like, well, I can really do something here, and then just hit a fucking wall. And I agree, like, Clinton probably should come in and just be, you know, the master Machiavel. But the thing you've forgotten is that the Clintons just have this preternatural capacity to fuck up all the time. Like, their aides talk too much. They give away strategy to the wrong person who then fights against them. It's this awful soap opera, and it has been forever. And the whole thing with the Clinton Foundation and Hillary Clinton, this campaign, like, anybody with two brain cells to rub together could have said 2 years ago, you need to divest yourself completely from this.
Yeah.
With all responsibility, all capacity to make decisions, all finances, just done. You are fucking dead to that thing. And they didn't, because they're idiots and they will fuck up over and over. And we're just going to watch 4 years of, like, it's going to be like an Armando Iannucci sitcom, only you're not going to like anybody and it's not going to be funny.
Well, that's fucking bleak, man. I was trying to offer some sort of optimistic, positive view of what could happen.
I'm sorry. Like, I
the
just...
question becomes the question becomes the question becomes who could do a better job, though? You know, with the conditions that are currently in place, obviously, this woman is one half of a political power couple that have a propensity to put their foot in it over and over again. But they do get shit done. And who else would be better suited to do it in this current environment?
If no Obama could, I can see. If Obama could have a third term, I think he would be perfect, because he figured out the judo, right? He lets the far right and like the really, you know, like the conservative, the Tea Party caucus or whatever, run at him, and then he steps aside and just sort of pushes them and then watches them face plant 20 feet away and skid across the ground and look like just miserable, incompetent assholes. But it took him a long time to realize he just had to be that kind of heartless motherfucker. But once he did, he was really good at it. And like, I will fully admit, I completely misread his nominating Merrick Garland, to the Supreme Court.
How so? What did you think he was doing by that? And how did that change in your head?
I felt like he was going back to the well that he had when he first came into office, where he was trying to find this bipartisan compromise. He didn't nominate the most reasonable liberal candidate he could to the Supreme Court. He didn't nominate one of the younger liberal candidates. He picked an older, more middle of the road guy. And I just thought, like, you fuckhead, right? You're compromising with people who are never going to meet you, you know, because that happened. You know, in the early days of the Obama administration, they would sort of get to the bargaining table and show up and say, I'm already meeting you halfway. And then Republicans would say, well, we're running 20 feet away from the table backward. And so now you have to meet us halfway here. And so it felt like that. And then the Republicans just, you know, they walked right into it. They refused to confirm him. They wouldn't even talk to the guy in most cases. They just said,
and so
like,
your
well,
calculation, you think that Obama had all of that played out, that chess move, you know, the four chess moves in advance.
Yeah, I feel like that was one of his judo things. Like, he was going to give somebody who, like, you could just, you know, you could confirm him almost sight unseen. And he would be, you know, like a safely middle of the road jurist. And then they said, absolutely not. We're going to break the fucking Supreme Court. We're just going to have eight justices. We're just not going to fill this empty space. Because this guy was nominated by Barack Obama and, you know, we can't trust him. He's out of control. And you can totally trust the guy. I mean, the guy is like, you know, he's like a Ralph Lauren manager. You know, he's going to give you polos and khakis. He's just completely normal and predictable. There are no surprises here. You know, he's not going to get on the Supreme Court and rip his robe off and then have like a Che Guevara shirt and be like, full communism right now, motherfucker. I mean, like, he's completely normal.
What's your take on the question of, I'm going to say when Hillary Clinton gets in, because I've read the polls in the last 7 days, when she is inaugurated, will Merrick Garland be still the Supreme Court nomination, or do you think that she will use this political capital to get a more liberal justice in?
Well, I have no idea.
And by political capital, I don't mean any that she's going to have going into office, because obviously there is none, and she's probably going to be actually deficient, but just through this whole Supreme Court nomination process.
No, you're right to like mention the her not getting shit done, because of course, you know, she's a woman and the Republican Party does not like them very much, and she's a Democrat and they are, you know, just, you know, like a priori traitors. So she's fucked on day one in the same way that Obama is fucked on day one. And like the only difference is that he represented a smaller demographic in America. You know, she represents 50% of America and she's fucked. Like this is going to be the most obdurate, just moronic stalemate, probably easily in American history. I don't know of like other historical stalemates, but I would argue that this probably belongs, in like a top five or whatever. But, I don't know what she's going to do. My guess, like, were I in her position, you know, just keep, you know, put Merrick Garland up for nomination again and don't expend your political capital on somebody else. You've got,
yeah, right.
You know, because the Republicans' argument has been, we're not going to even talk about this person until the presidential election so the people can have a voice, right? Well, you know, the people had a fucking voice. They elected Barack Obama.
Yeah.
So, you know, she undercuts that argument and then just puts him up again. Because if he's good for Obama, he's probably going to be good for Clinton. And there's not, like, he's not 20 years old. You know, he's not going to be on the court for 40 years. So there's not a long-term liability. He's not a firebrand. He should be, you know, entirely within the realm of acceptability and just say like, hey, listen, you know, you made a bet that your guy was going to win. He didn't. I won. Confirm the motherfucker. And then use the political capital for the next one.
Yeah, you know,
and
right.
Throw all the way behind.
Because she'll get... Is it predicted that she'll get two based on the age of the current Supreme Court justices?
She could get four. With their age. So, you know, she could permanently reshape the court for one to two generations if the Senate confirmed her nominees. And so the other question is if the Democrats actually win, you know, like a 51 seats in the Senate and they've got just a pure majority, are they just going to cut the shit and go straight to reconciliation and just start passing stuff without, like, fuck it, no, you know, you can't filibuster, we're just going to do this and we're done, you know, because that was something that the Republicans did, and the Democrats again were, you know, they always tie their hands behind their back like, you're cheating, I would never cheat, that would be dishonorable, and then, you know, they get their shit stomped. So I'd be curious to see if they just start like trying to ram shit through the Senate, and then suddenly the Republicans go, oh well, we actually have to have a bipartisan process and comity here, and we have to have input. I'm not holding my breath, despite the fact that I'm talking way too much and need to breathe heavily.
Do you think there is any possibility that Barack Obama could wind up a Supreme Court justice?
No. No, I mean, it would be fun.
Because he doesn't want it?
No, I mean, like, it would be fun. Like, you know, we'd have another Taft, right? but, like, he's just so toxically a black man and a Democrat. They're never going to confirm him. Especially,
you reckon?
Well, they spent 8 years.
Like, with the changing demographics in America at the moment, like, I'm not talking about this would be her first appointment, but maybe let's predict somehow that Hillary Clinton gets a second term, and so we're talking about in like 6 years' time from now. Mm-hmm. You don't see that as a possibility?
I don't. Well, for one thing, his big goal, along with Eric Holder, is to go ahead and flip the map in state races around the country, where because we're coming up in 2020 when there will be another census and another opportunity to redraw all the congressional districts, which now, I mean, like we mentioned this, I think, last episode, but the Democrats got millions more votes in 2014 than the Republicans and yet like lost seats across the board. You know, gerrymandering these districts does that, where you have all these safe Republican seats, and so these people are in charge of the budget. They're almost impossible to dislodge. So Obama and Holder are trying to make these things competitive on the state level, so states can redraw district boundaries. So you can either take control of state houses, or you can take control of the governor's office or the attorney general, And depending on the state, you will have mechanisms to influence fairer boundaries in districts.
That will make it more politically agnostic in terms of where the boundaries lie.
Yeah, I mean,
theoretically more fair for the whole country.
The classic example is that Eric Cantor, who is the number three Republican in Congress, was primaried by some like Ayn Rand teaching moron, right? And
yeah.
Because he was hard on immigration and he depicted Eric Cantor as a squish. And Eric Cantor is not a squish. Eric Cantor is, you know, Eric Cantor is fucking terrifying. And this guy was like, well, he's not terrifying enough, and won. And so, you know, the Republicans have their own, like, district pressures, right? But they have been engineered by making these districts where Democratic and independent voters are immaterial. So what you do is you radicalize the people who come out of these districts, because the only way to win is to win the primary. The general election is an afterthought. So you win the primary by going harder and harder right. And so that's what did in Eric Cantor. So, Obama and Holder's idea is to roll this back and make these more bipartisan districts where, yeah, you might be a Republican and you might win, but you've got to represent 49% of the district who are Democrats and who care about certain things. So, you know, it's a way of, like, re-adding moderation and bipartisan cooperation or, like, re-injecting it into Congress in a way that we haven't seen for over a decade. But Eric Holder is not going to do that shit on his own. The man is nice, but he looks like a Muppet. He's got no charisma. Obama's got to do this. He's the one who's got to go and stump.
He doesn't have charisma, right? Eric Holder, and he probably shouldn't, because Attorney General is a position of great esteem where I kind of want a dude who looks a bit like a robot that you can just kind of project an absolute neutrality onto. But God damn it. It would have been nice to have someone who could crack a smile, if not a joke, every once in a while.
He did actually, when he was being questioned by, I think it was over Fast and Furious, when he was going before a House panel of, you know, the usual idiots, and he smirked and had a good time. But for the most part, yeah, he's not a charismatic dude. So Obama's going to have to do the legwork. There's no way he can do that if he's sitting in the Supreme Court. This seems like what he really wants to do. And really, I don't think there's any way he would get confirmed. He has unforgivable blackness, and he has unforgivable liberalness again, like, you know, these guys have spent 8 years claiming that he was going to usher in, you know, a fascist dystopia. You know, his border patrol policy was letting immigrants in, and he was going to seize all your guns, and he was going to come and it just make you gay kiss somebody or something, you know, like, just so
and turn Muslim as well.
So they painted themselves into a corner. There's even if they wanted to confirm him, they can't, because, well, look what they said for almost a decade. So, you know, are they lying, or was, you know, like, you know,
well, it certainly hasn't affected his poll numbers. Like, this is the interesting thing, and why the argument of saying that President Obama didn't have the right to be able to determine who the new Supreme Court justice would be, that's not an argument that holds water in the worst of times. But his approval numbers are so fucking stratospheric, sky high. They're like the highest they've ever been.
Yeah, no, he's beating out Reagan, I think, at this point in his term.
That is nuts. It's crazy. Okay, well, Jeb, let's wrap it up. Do you have any final shouty man thoughts that you want to put out there into the world? I've really enjoyed this, by the way. I feel like we have tapped into a small piece of your reptilian brain via the political neurocortex, and it's made for a really fascinating time.
It's the part of my brain that my grandmother, were she still alive, would be uncomfortable listening to, because there was a lot of swearing and negativity and aggression.
I've learned a lot, and I've enjoyed it.
And I also spoke too fast. So this thing with the FBI, like the James Comey thing, what's interesting to me, and I don't know if you saw this, but, you know, he released a statement saying, like, well, we're, you know, this is part of an ongoing investigation. We've discovered this other batch of emails or whatever. And then he sends this mass, like, you know, group emails to the FBI saying, well, I may have put my foot in it. My intent was to do this, and I'm not sure, blah, blah, blah. And it seemed like...
Oh, shit, I haven't seen that second bit. So what was that? Sorry, was that a statement that he released?
Yeah, he was saying, like, well, I wanted to sort of... You can see what he's arguing is, like, I wanted to thread the needle. You know, I wanted to be...
Right.
I wanted to inform the American public without being
politicized.
Yeah, I don't want to damage the election by you know, sort of clearing the purity of the turf, as we might say in horse racing. So, the thing is, like, he sends this memo, and like, he fucked it up. Like, he fucked it up completely because...
Yeah, he did.
They have these emails, and people are going through, like, you know, New York Times, Washington Post, they're searching every to and from field, and Hillary Clinton is not in them.
Mm.
She's not, you know, like, if you're going to, like, if this is germane to Hillary Clinton, which is what he indicated at the start, maybe she should have gotten
that
she should have gotten the fucking email, or she should have written the fucking email. But if she didn't do either, you fucked up. Like, and so the initial sort of attitude I had was, okay, man, this guy is just scared to death, right? This is such a politicized environment. He's just going to over-disclose things because he doesn't want to be caught, you know, like, or be suspected of concealing something. And then, you know, he releases this with that statement, and the statement is not commensurate with the content of the emails at all. And what I thought was incompetence now seems like evil. Like, he really does not like Hillary Clinton, or he's trying to influence the election, because that is a colossal systemic level of fucking up.
It's a communication disorder on the highest level. And it's a good thing that the opponent is Trump, because if it wasn't, like, this really could have changed shit in a big, big way.
No, absolutely. This should be an October surprise, except for everything around it that undermined it.
There's actually a good piece that's just come out from Matthew Miller in the Washington Post, where he basically posits that James Comey shouldn't be running the FBI anymore off the back of this. Like, this is prime evidence to suggest that the dude is not actually fit to hold that title anymore. So let's watch how that spins in the next few units of 3 hours at a time.
One other thing I want to add is what's really funny to me is, like, watching all these liberals going, oh, James Comey has besmirched the name of the FBI. Like, the FBI was a racist, like, you know, red baiting and hunting and infiltrating and just fucking foul organization for most of its existence. Like,
don't even have to go that far back in the history of the FBI to realize that it's not exactly squeaky clean.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's like this dude made a really bad fajita, and you're like, this is disrespectful to the legacy of Chili's. Like, fuck, like, who's going to notice? I mean, it just blends into the, like, just this endless sort of timeline of atrocity and stupidity. Fine, like, I mean, if anything, the dude was being on brand for the FBI. Like, let him go.
Your fajita metaphor is the strangest grab I have heard your mind attempt in this podcast yet. Fantastic. And what a way to end. Let's leave it there, Jeb. Go have a lie down. I'm going to go enjoy the fantastic sights here in Anaheim, California. All of you, we'll try our best to get more episodes out as quickly as we can. It's difficult. I'm flying back to New Zealand soon. But we'll do our best. That's all you need to know. And we hope that you're well out there. And just be kind to people, eh? Be nice to one another. If you see a plane crash, go and see that everyone's okay. If there's a car on the side of the road, bring some water. Try and help them out.
Tim, before you go, let me ask you, have you been, like, I know you're in Anaheim, Los Angeles. There's a really great restaurant there. I don't know if you've been there. It's called Del Taco.
Del Taco. Oh, no. I've not been to the wonderful Del Taco, the 5-star Del Taco yet.
Listen,
there's so many great places like In-N-Out and Five Guys and...
Just
Del Taco is lower down on the list.
Just you know, like, if you can't get to Sparrow, you know, just check it out.
Okay, man, you have my word on that. I will go to a Del Taco before I fly out of here. I'll do it.
Okay, I apologize, everybody. Thank you for bearing with me.
The director himself has said he doesn't know whether the emails referenced in his letter are significant or not. I'm confident whatever they are will not change the conclusion reached in July. Therefore, it's imperative that the Bureau explain this issue in question, whatever it is, without any delay.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.